A former Roman Catholic priest has pleaded no contest to sexual abuse charges in Jackson. James Rapp did not contest charges that he had sexual contact with students while he was a wrestling coach and a teacher at Lumen Christi High School. He faces 20 years in prison, although the 75-year-old Rapp is already in prison for similar sex crimes in Oklahoma. So let's talk about the significance of his case. David Clossy is the director of SNAP, the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. David, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Tell us, what makes James Rapp's case so particularly interesting?
Well, it might be the only case that we know of in the country where an already imprisoned predator priest has been charged and convicted of more charges. In other words, typically once a child molesting cleric is behind bars, and very, very few of them ever get there, but once they're behind bars, no matter how many other victims come forward, oftentimes prosecutors are just reluctant to spend the time and resources on filing additional charges. You know, this guy, he worked in half a dozen states. Nobody knows how many kids he actually hurt. So this is a particularly egregious offender, and we're very grateful to the Attorney General for doing this.
It surprises me that it's so rare for prosecutors to want to go after someone already in prison because, as you say, these priests were moved all around, so there are doubtless many other victims. I'm just surprised that there wouldn't be concern in advocating for those victims.
Well, I share your surprise. By the same token, though, I've been involved in this issue with SNAP now for 27 years almost, and we do see, even now, considerable reluctance by law enforcement officials to risk stirring up the ire of powerful religious figures. If a prosecutor has X amount of dollars, he or she can probably use that money to very safely and easily pursue, let's just say, two dozen purse snatchers, carjackers, low-level criminals who will get public defenders and plead guilty without controversy. But the prosecutor can spend those same amount of dollars oftentimes pursuing one child molesting cleric. And the DA fears that there will be lots of controversy. There'll be angry letters to the editor. You're picking on our religion. There'll be dozens and dozens of former parishioners who love this priest who will show up in court in his defense. So I think prosecutors just sort of do the math and think, you know, why take the risk? Why don't I stick with going after the safer criminals for me and, you know, hopefully then pave the way for an easier political career for me in the future.
Speaking of being surprised, it would surprise me that parishioners would be saying no, not, I mean, that they're still saying no, not Father so-and-so, but you're still seeing that.
We are. It's diminishing, thank goodness, but very, very slowly. It's important to remember that these child molesting clerics usually are very shrewd, very cunning, extremely popular and charismatic. So they do, in fact, fool people. We see this phenomenon all the time, Catholics especially, but I think it's true in other faiths, too. Everybody verbally acknowledges and intellectually realizes that, yes, child molesters can show up in any walk of life, in any position, but it feels very, very different when reports surface against someone that I know.
Hmm.
I mean, I can't tell you how many times over the decades we've seen articles in newspapers or on the radio and TV, and parishioners say, well, I know Father Mike. He would never do such a thing. He's always been so good to kids. And I just cringe because, you know, the very attributes that enable a predator to get access to kids, abuse them, and silence them, those very attributes are the attributes that make a pastor effective in his job, right? The way I oftentimes put it is that, you know, unless a child molester is charming and charismatic and lovable and outgoing, no child wants to be around him, and no parent would let their child be around him. So, again, the very skills that enable someone to molest a kid and get by with it are the skills that enable them to succeed on the job. And somehow we just can't wrap our minds around the fact that child molesters, they're not the people who give us the creeps, give us the willies. They're not the obvious social misfits. They're some of the most popular, lovable people around us.
I'm talking with David Clossy, the director of SNAP, the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. In the wake of a no-contest plea from a former Roman Catholic priest, James Rapp, to charges that he had sexual contact with his students while he was a teacher and a wrestling coach at Lumen Christi High School in Jackson. David, you say, despite the increasing spotlight on predator priests, that you haven't seen consequences in the church. What are you seeing or not seeing?
This is hard for Catholics to understand and accept. It's very counterintuitive, but it's painfully true. There has never been never been a Catholic bishop on the planet who has been defrocked, demoted, or disciplined for concealing abuse, shuffling predators, stiff-arming police, or any kind of misbehavior related to child sex crimes. There have been two bishops on the planet who have been criminally charged and found guilty of enabling child sex crimes by withholding evidence from police. Two bishops, one in Missouri, one in France. But within the church, the bottom line is no matter how many kids get hurt, how many lawsuits are filed, how many settlements are paid out, how much controversy, how many distraught parishioners leave the church, again, no Catholic official has been defrocked or demoted or disciplined.
We've seen resignations, haven't we?
Yes, there have been a handful of resignations, a couple of dozen resignations in the U.S., of bishops who have committed child sex crimes. And we've seen maybe three resignations by bishops who have concealed child sex crimes. But even in those cases, I have to point out, that's never mentioned. The Vatican never says, this bishop is stepping down because he put kids in harm's way. They leave that unsaid. Then parishioners are free to make their own decisions. And we think that would be the single most effective step that the Pope could take. You know, forget about all the policies and procedures and protocols and panels. You know, if Pope Francis would simply say, today, these 10 or 12 or 15 bishops are no longer bishops. They're just priests. Or we're kicking them out of the church because they knowingly moved predators and enabled kids to be hurt again. That would just send shockwaves throughout the Catholic world, and it should, but it just isn't happening, not under this Pope, not under his predecessors, not anywhere.
And I think many Catholics and non-Catholics hear this narrative that Pope Francis is paying attention to the way the Church deals with abuse of priests.
Yes, I mean, this Pope has done many wonderful things. He's given a lot of hope to millions of Catholics. He's broken the mold in a lot of ways. Sadly, when it comes, though, to the safety of kids, it's the same old, with one twist, and that is that Pope Francis is a master at public relations, at symbolic gestures, at nice words. He's light years ahead of his predecessor in that regard. But unfortunately, gestures and nice words and apologies don't protect children. It's decisive action that protects kids. And that's what has been missing in the Catholic hierarchy and remains missing in the Catholic hierarchy today, from Rome all the way down to the local diocesan level.
Let me bring you back to Michigan as we talk about James Rapp's case. How does Michigan, in your view, compare with other states in terms of, if you will, ease of prosecuting these abuse cases?
Well, there's two parts of the legal arena, of course, civil and criminal. On the criminal side, Michigan lawmakers have done a pretty good job of enabling child sex abuse victims to file charges against their predators. On the civil side, however, Michigan is near the bottom of the barrel. Michigan has some of the most restrictive statutes of limitations in the country. And the problem with that, of course, is that it's the civil cases that expose both those who commit and those who conceal abuse. In other words, a local district attorney gets a report that Father Mike is molesting kids, and that DA hopefully has the political spine and the resources to successfully prosecute Father Mike. But very rarely does that DA go on to say, I wonder if any of Father Mike's colleagues or supervisors knew about or suspected this and kept silent. Most of the time, when those who are complicit in abuse are publicly exposed, it's through civil litigation. And that's why we in SNAP have long called for relaxing or reforming these archaic predator-friendly statutes of limitations that say you've got 5 years after you turn 18 or you've got 3 years after you turn 21 to take action legally. And that's part of the reason why we believe in Michigan. You know, it's one of the states where most of the clergy sex crimes and cover-ups sadly remain covered up.
What could we do better in Michigan to bring these abusers to justice and then punishment?
Well, the first thing would be to not just eliminate the statute of limitations going forward, but also do what half a dozen states have done, which is suspend the statute of limitations for a year or 2 years or 3 years. In other words, say to people, look, if you were sexually abused by anybody at any time in any setting, you've got X amount of time to come forward and expose that person in court. That would make an enormous difference. But regardless of what the lawmakers do, you know, Catholics and citizens of the state can and should lean on their bishops and say, look, 30 bishops out of 200 in America have posted on diocesan websites the names of predator priests, 30 bishops. What a simple, common sense safety step, right? If I take over a chemical company in Michigan and I find out that, you know, in the Grand Rapids area, There are 18 toxic waste dump sites, or in the Detroit area, you know, there's 64 toxic waste dump sites. Well, the very first thing I should do, of course, is alert the public. Say, here's where the bad places are. Keep your kids and your families away from these bad places. I've got to do more than, of course, you know, remediation and fencing and warning and all the rest, but at least I've got to disclose, here's where the danger is or might be. Why won't Catholic bishops do that with these predator priests? What possible reason would they have for not putting the names of the proven and admitted and credibly accused child molesting clerics up on church websites? The 30 bishops who've done that, by the way, not a single one of them has said, gee, shucks, in retrospect, I wish I hadn't done that. That was the wrong thing to do.
David Klossy is the executive director of SNAP, the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. David, it was good to talk with you. Thank you so much for being on the program.
My pleasure. Thank you very, very much.